Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Was that our number two echo better than last week?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, because I when I did one on Thursday, it was a little creepy. It skewed creepy, and I felt like that one was better.
Yeah, this one is less creepy.
Great, okay. Less creepy is what I'm going for.
Yes,
Brandi
yes.
Cruz filling in for my friend Dory Monson for the rest of the week, up until the brand spanking new year, when he's going to be back all jazzed and ready to go or whatever.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. So I was... As I often do, I just sit in bed when I can't sleep and scroll through Twitter. And I saw that like three of the trending topics had to do with Russell Wilson. And I was laughing because I kind of joined this. I'm in the salty camp where like I was a little salty when he left. But he'd been kind of gnawing on me before he left because he got into this real activist sort of like holier than thou. And then sort of the activist element. And I'm like, just play football. And I'm not trying to say like the just dribble, you know, or whatever. Who was that told LeBron just dribble? Which I'm not trying to say that. But he got very distracted. And then he had his like hot new wife.
Right. It seemed like his heart wasn't in it as much anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that athletes can't speak out about social issues by all means.
He also appeared to love us as much. He didn't appear to want to be here.
Well, obviously he didn't. He wanted to go to Denver and things aren't working out too well, apparently. So I'd seen a couple games with Russell Wilson where he wasn't doing very well. But then, of course, there was a game over the weekend. They played the Rams, right? So I saw SpongeBob trending with Russell Wilson. And I was like, what was that about? So during the Christmas Day game, when Denver was playing the Rams, there was like a simulcast going on where the game was on CBS, but it was also on Nickelodeon. I guess that's like a Christmas Day thing. I didn't know that they did that. And so if you went and watched the Nickelodeon one, it was like all the graphics and stuff were like meant for kids. It was kind of cute, right? It's like you want your kids to play. Like the parents want to watch the game, but it's fun for the kids.
Right. It was also explaining some of the things to the kids that they might not know about the game, things
yeah.
like that. It's kind of cool.
It's cute.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they had play-by-play announcers, but they also had Nickelodeon stars and Nickelodeon characters who would pop up on screen and give sort of this play-by-play.
Like the Manning brothers.
Right. So one of them was Patrick Starr, which is the star from SpongeBob SquarePants. And so he's down in the little corner of the screen, and he's given his commentary. So the actual announcers hand it off to Patrick Starr to do the play-by-play as the Broncos take over on offense. So Russell Wilson is out there. And you see the little pink star, and he's doing his little play. And Russell Wilson throws an interception to former Seahawks teammate Bobby Wagner. And Patrick Starr just roasts him.
And so what's up? Oh, there's Russ Wilson. Oh, that's called an interception.
That's close. That's close.
Bobby Wagner. That's not what he wanted to cook.
No, I think he burnt whatever he was cooking. Bobby Wagner with the interception. The SoCal kid back home. Patrick, how exciting is that?
Bobby Wagner coming to town and doing that with his old teammate.
I love he goes, that's not what he wanted to cook. Just trolling this cartoon character. But I was, so Dave Wyman, he's going to come on tomorrow, right?
He is.
Usually comes on Tuesdays. And I actually, sometimes I have to go to you and be like, what's happening in sports that I can ask Dave Wyman about? Because I'm not like always watching. But I had so many things to ask him about today for Russell Wilson. I was so excited. They're like, oh, he's going to do it tomorrow. So I'll reserve some of these questions for Dave Wyman. But one of the things I saw during this game is there was this big kind of blow up on the sidelines because the backup quarterback was yelling at the O-line because there were multiple instances where Russell Wilson got sacked and the O-line didn't help him up. Like, they're just standing there. And clearly there is some bad feelings, because usually you'd rush over there, or you'd try to, like, run. No, not at all.
Nothing.
And so the backup quarterback was yelling at him, like, hey, you got to go help him up. And it was this big ordeal. So I don't know if Russell Wilson has already worn out his welcome in Denver.
And then they fired their coach that night.
And they fired their coach.
Pretty much for the next
and
day.
And people are blaming Russell Wilson, saying, you know, that he's doing so poorly, so it reflects negatively on the coach. But I don't know. And again, I'll save some of these questions for Dave Wyman about, is it really Russell Wilson's fault that the coach got fired? Because I've heard that this was like a long time coming.
He took a different approach in coaching than Pete Carroll does, and so this was the result. So I don't think it's all his fault, but it obviously there was a coach and player communication breakdown this year.
So maybe you guys tell me on the text line, do you feel bad for Russell Wilson? Is this sort of comeuppance? Are you in the salty camp like me? I guess I'm bordering on not caring about how he does anymore.
Well, it's funny because I think that we thought we would not be talking about Russ anymore. You know, you talk about him when he gets traded a couple games in, see how he does. But the fact that we're still talking to him going into playoffs because it's so embarrassing for him, and it really seems to be the best trade ever for Seattle and the worst trade ever for Denver, maybe in the league. And I don't know. It's he just won't go away from Seattle, really.
Yeah, let's see on the text line. Shane says, it may not be fair of me to say this, but it feels to me like Russell's game started to fall apart when he hooked up with Sierra. Now, look, Shane and Olympia.
They've been together a long time. We went to the Super Bowl.
Shane and Olympia.
He was with Sierra.
Would your game not fall apart if you were with Sierra? I mean, let's give Russell. I can see how she would be very distracting. If you could focus on football or Sierra, it's hard to blame the guy.
Well, like I said, I think it's more than maybe two kids. I think it's more him worrying about his future after football more than he's worried about football right now.
His image and things like that. And again, I'm not trying to say, and someone reminded me, it was Laura Ingraham who said, shut up and dribble. I'm not of that mindset. I think that if you have a voice and a platform, you use it however you see fit. Athletes are absolutely people who are influential in American politics and amongst kids.
I don't feel like he gets very political.
He doesn't get political. Well,
occasionally,
in 2020,
but that's when you kind of, everybody was, I guess, at that point. But I think that his thing is just more publicity. And him going in with these scowls on red carpets and stuff and not being the friendly, fun Russ that people kind of know he was, maybe, or maybe still is, but it's hiding it for some weird reason for image sake. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of things that he is not being advised well on or making bad decisions about.
Yeah, and my whole thing is you can speak out about things. You can be social or political. You can, you know, marry Sierra and do all these other things. But people, you've put yourself out there. So I think it's okay to criticize them about other distractions off the field.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. The text line is lighting up. Russell's had cat in the 425. Russell's had a big piece of humble pie. 425. Russ has to lose one more game. If Denver loses one more game, Seattle gets the first pick overall in next year's draft. Oh, is that true? I don't know how those ins and outs work. I'm just, oh my gosh, this text line. I can't keep up. We'll get to more of these coming up later in the big show. Moving right along in the fastest 15. So we know that car thefts has been a big issue. It's been huge car thefts and then people just fleeing from law enforcement because we prioritize criminals in Washington state as opposed to punishing criminals and prioritizing law-abiding citizens. But that is a conversation for another time. So 39 vehicles stolen in one day in Pierce County. Over the, this was on Thursday, I think.
I believe it was Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing about it is 20 of those 39 were Hyundai or Kias. So it was like a very specific model of vehicles. So there's a task force, the Puget Sound ATF says that, and it's saying if you own a Hyundai or a Kia that was made model year 2011 to 2021, and it uses just a standard key, you know, where you actually got to stick it in the ignition and turn the thing, that you need to take extra steps to prevent theft. And apparently, oh, you're telling me that there's audio in here. Okay, hold on. I've learned to read Nicole's sign language that she has for telling me that I need
signals.
To do something. So this is Cairo 7 talking about how exactly and why the thieves are targeting these specific vehicles.
39 vehicles were stolen in Pierce County just yesterday. 20 of them were Hyundai and Kia models. Certain models of these cars made between 2011 through 2021 use a standard metal key to turn start the car. The Auto Task Force says experienced thieves and kids have learned how to start these vehicles without a key thanks to social media videos. Thieves can break the car window, pop off the steering column, and start your car using a USB cable, and they can be gone in under a minute. The Puget Sound Task Force encourages buying an anti-theft steering wheel lock to reduce your risk of becoming a victim.
Yeah, that, I mean, sounds like you need to do that. I mean, I think all of us should be taking steps to make sure our vehicles don't get broken into or stolen in this crime climate we're in. But specifically, this is really useful information. You got to buy a Nicole, will you look up how much is a steering wheel lock? Again, Kia or Hyundai produced from 2011 to 2021 in Pierce County one day. 39 cars stolen. 20 of them were these particular makes and models. Interesting to hear that they were like learning how to do this on social media. And also, no surprise, this task force says that when they found and recovered these stolen vehicles, they were like completely destroyed, most of them. Extensive damage, or they were completely not drivable, not operable. And that's the Puget Sound, I said the ATF, ATTF, the Puget Sound Auto Theft Task Force. Nicole, you got a price for that?
They're $30 to $50.
Okay. I think that's a reasonable price to pay to make sure your car doesn't get stolen. Sort of sad that this is the position that we found ourselves in. But if you, again, have a Hyundai or a Kia that you have to actually start with a key, like in the good old days, 2011 to 2021, which I'm surprised a car in 2021 still requires that key. Then you need to maybe buy one of these. Where did you find that, Nicole? Is it on Amazon?
That one was.
Okay. Mm-hmm, 30 to 50 bucks. You got to invest in that to your car.
And that's what the task force, I think we did the story last week where they have lost their state patrol officers. It's a very small task force. So I don't see car theft getting better anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. Let's see. Moving along in the fastest 15. Nicole, do we have sound with this George Santos fellow?
No.
Nicole.
Not right now.
What happened to the sound?
I was on it, but I forgot we were going to do that here.
Interesting.
I have it recorded, but not ready to roll.
We talked about this briefly, but remember we had the Lion Clyde Shavers, the state rep candidate in the 10th Legislative District in Washington, the Democrat, who lied about, you know, embellished his military service, claimed he was an attorney, hasn't passed the bar, and then these revelations came out a week after ballots had already been sent out. And so Clyde Shavers ended up winning. So he's now going down to Olympia this legislative session as a new Democrat. And the Democrats didn't even care that he lied. It was like, nope, just a warm body. We don't care, basically, which is ridiculous. And it's so hypocritical because now there's this New York congressman-elect named George Santos. And I look at him the exact same way. Now this is Lion George Santos. I don't care what political party you are. If you are morally honest and consistent, you look at the behavior, not the political party. This guy lied about all sorts of stuff. I mean, even more lies than Clyde Shavers.
And he's been pretty out there for the last few weeks. And that's why he gave these quotes to, I think, the New York Times, New York Post. But most of the last couple of weeks, he's been talking about other stuff. He's been all over and nobody's figured it out until recently.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So he lied about, said he worked for two big financial institutions. No record of him. Lied about, you know, college, lied about some charity, I think, that his family ran. Like, this guy lied about everything. And they didn't find out until after he's elected, which is crazy to me. Because in this climate, the internet gives you, you can find out anything. And these were huge, huge lies. And I think that both political parties are going to do a little more. Like, if somebody says, oh, I went to Yale. It's like if you're their opponent and you're not calling and trying to find records just to make sure, like, you're not doing your due diligence, because apparently we can't trust anyone these days. So anyway, he goes on, he did one on Fox, but he also did this interview with, was it the New York Post?
Yeah, so it was the Post.
And he admits to lying. He's just like, yep.
I am not a criminal. The controversy will not deter me from having good legislative success. I will be effective. I will be good.
No, you're not good. You're a liar. Yeah, he actually tweeted out, yeah, before he kind of set the record straight, which was to admit that he was a liar, he said, to the people of New York 3, I have my story to tell, and it will be told next week. I want to assure everyone that I will address your questions, that I remain committed to deliver the results I campaigned on. Public safety, inflation, education, and more. Happy holidays to all. He said that on December 22nd, then he comes out and does this interview, acknowledging that he lied. So that was your story? I'm going to get my side out there.
And that is that
you're a liar. And it's crazy to me. And I really do think that there has to be. So in Washington State, and by the way, he said he said he had this big, impressive record in college and stuff. I didn't graduate from any institution of higher learning. I'm embarrassed and sorry for having embellished my resume. I own up to that. We do stupid things in life.
Hey, don't put that on us.
Yeah, it's like, first of all, don't lump us in with your lies. It's like, we do stupid things when we're kids, not when we're running for Congress.
Right.
And I really think that there needs to be an easier way to almost like election redos. And I know there are some avenues. For instance, in Washington State, when Clyde Shavers won and he beat Republican Greg Gilday, it was my understanding that, you know, let's say that there had been a difference of 10 votes and they could find 10 voters who said that they were misled based on material falsehoods, that they could get kind of an election redo. But it's a really hard process. It's a really high bar. And so now you're sort of, it's up to political parties, I think, kind of with what to do. And I really think Republicans ought to push this guy out. I think that they ought to force him to resign when he takes over in Congress. And I really think Democrats in Washington State need to do the exact same thing to Clyde Shavers. I just think it's fascinating. I will never understand. And I get that I'm like a moderate independent, so I think it's easier for me to think about things like outside this political bubble. But I will never understand the absolute hypocrisy of Democrats turning a blind eye to Clyde Shavers and then railing on this George Santos guy. It's like, do you not see the blind hypocrisy, or do you just not care? I guess I try to figure out which one it is. Are you just that morally bankrupt because you're that partisan? Or are you really in your own mind like, oh, it's okay for this Democrat to lie, but not this Republican? Somebody help me figure that out, because I just don't get it.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think we can figure that out. I think, you said, it's a warm body, and so eventually they all just turn the blind eye.
We just want the vote. All right, that has been the Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
A world of news in a tiny 15-minute package just for you. Coming up on the big show, there is yet another push to finally put checks and balances on the governor's emergency power after a very long state of emergency around the pandemic. I spoke to a Democratic state senator and a Republican state senator who have come together on a piece of legislation to finally do just that. We'll talk about whether it has any hope in the world of passing. That's ahead on the big show. Brandi Crews filling in.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Brandi Cruz filling in for my friend Dori Monson for the rest of the year. I was just talking in the last segment how the two-party system drives me absolutely bananas because it's all about political points. It's not about progress, not about doing what's right. It's about doing what your party thinks is right. And it's all just very annoying and exhausting. And I really can't think of a better example than the debate over emergency powers in Olympia. So I will never understand. During the pandemic, obviously, there was this very long, 900-day-long state of emergency where Governor Inslee had basically unilateral power to do what he wanted to do. And our state government, our laws do not allow for really significant checks and balances from the legislature. And I thought that that should even annoy Democrats. Like, why are you even there if you don't want to have a say in anything? And Democrats refuse to put checks and balances on the governor's power, except for a few Democrats who are once again trying to push for emergency power reform this upcoming legislative session. So there is a bipartisan bill in the Senate. It's been pre-filed by Republican Senator Linda Wilson, and it is co-sponsored by Democratic Senator Mark Mullett that would put some really, really reasonable checks and balances on not just Jay Inslee, but a future governor's emergency powers. I spoke to both of them about what the bill would do and whether it has any hope in the world of passing.
I know you guys have both supported in the past putting some checks and balances on a governor in a time of emergency. So how did we get to Senate Bill 5063 and both of your names being on it? Senator Wilson, we'll start with you.
Well, A few years ago, I started running the bill 5039, which was, was 2 years ago. And I think after the emergency started and the governor called the state of emergency, that's when I realized that there was more that we needed to do, that legislature needed to be part of the decisions. And so started looking at the bill from the year before, which was a bipartisan bill. Senator Hunt had signed on to it, and it was tweaking the law because it had been years and years since that law had been looked at. And then we needed to figure out a way to involve the legislature with the others because it was the shutdowns of the businesses, declaring who's essential, shutting down the schools, things like that. So that's what prompted the bill.
Senator Mullett, emergency power reform is a far less popular position for folks in your party to take. So how do you find yourself on this bill? Why is it something you're willing to sign on to?
I think I've signed on with Senator Wilson the past few sessions because I say to my colleagues, you have to look at this of what's the right form of government, not who currently has the governor's seat, but pretend it was the opposite party who had the governor's seat. What set of rules would you want in place? And I think if everyone's being intellectually honest with themselves, they would all support this bill because if the shoe was on the other foot, we would want this bill in place. And so I don't see how my message to my colleagues is we should respect how our Republican folks would want the same. And we would want the same. And this bill is actually the right public policy for the state of Washington. The governor can enact an emergency. It can't go on forever without involving the legislature at a much greater extent.
So let's talk about really one of the two big things that this does in terms of giving the legislature a little bit of oversight. Because when I look at it, it not only seems very reasonable to me, but it still seems like a high bar. You know, it's not making it very easy for one party to come in and to undo what the governor has done. So, Senator Wilson, can we start with you? Can you talk about, well, we'll split this up between the two of you. Can you talk about one of the big changes that this bill would put into place when it comes to emergency oversight?
What it would do is, after 90 days from the original call of the emergency power or emergency state of emergency, then we would have the ability to come in and as a legislature and either extend it or terminate it, right? And with our bill, you would have to, if we're out of session, all four corners would then have to vote to extend the emergency. And that we didn't have that. We don't have that at all right now, particularly when it comes to statutory orders.
And just to be clear, the element that allows, if the legislature is not in session, a state of emergency has already been in place for more than 90 days, and you say the four corners can come in and they can, in writing, terminate it. That means the minority leader and majority leader in the House and the Senate.
That's correct.
So there has to be, in order for that to happen, there would have to be unanimous bipartisan agreement amongst the leaders in the House and the Senate
to extend it. Right. It would take four corners to extend the emergency.
Senator Mullet, the other element where if the legislature is in session, they would have to, via concurrent resolution, decide what to do with the state of emergency. Can you explain what a concurrent resolution is?
Well, you basically just would have to have approval from both bodies. This is the course of action they want to take. And so you're forcing people to take a vote on whether or not this is what they want to see happen. It just would guarantee that we're kind of being held accountable to the people we represent. Because each legislative district, if you say that's roughly 160 or 70,000 people, we're much closer to the people we represent than a statewide elected official who is representing 7.6 million Washington residents. And I think the idea is hold people accountable down to the lowest ladder rung you can.
Mm-hmm. With that concurrent resolution, though, so this is Section B, if the legislature is in session through passage of a concurrent resolution terminating the state of emergency, is that a simple majority? Is that more than a simple majority?
I think it's a simple majority, Senator Wilson, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask you, Senator Mullet, to weigh in on, I kind of want to pick up where the legislature left off last year. There were some Democrats who had some maybe tight races they were facing in November of 2022, who expressed interest in the 2022 legislative session in emergency power reform. Senator Emily Randall was one of them. She ended up winning her seat again, but she pushed a bill, much to the disappointment of the governor, when it came to emergency power reform. Do you believe that that was a genuine effort to actually make change, or do you believe that was an election year stunt?
Well, there's definitely members in the Senate Democratic Caucus who wanted to see the reform. I thought that bill, I mean, I use the term butter soft. I thought it was not a very hard, aggressive bill. No. And I will admit, I was shocked when that bill passed the Senate and went to the House, the efforts the governor's office went through to make sure that bill didn't pass the House, because it just wasn't that aggressive of a bill. As you read it, it would have been hard, I think, with that bill, because I think we needed 3 out of 4 in that bill, Linda. But once again, that bill, it took an active effort to end the emergency. It wasn't like it took an active effort to keep it going.
Right.
And I think that's Senator Wilson's bill says, You can keep it going, but it's going to take some energy. Whereas the bill the Senate passed last year that the governor's office was obviously very uncomfortable with, because they put a lot of political effort into making sure it didn't get out of the House, was basically it just made it a little bit easier for us to end the emergency, but it still took a lot of political effort on our side to do that. And so it didn't pass the House, but there were folks on my side. I know I'm not going to out them here right now, but who wanted to see reform as well. And so maybe the prime sponsor of the bill might have been picked for strategic reasons. I think you bring up a valid point there. But there was, I can assure you, a group of Senate Democrats who also wanted to see the same reform that our Republican colleagues were asking for.
I love how you say you don't want to out them, like it would be some terrible thing for them politically for people to find out that they support emergency power reform.
Hey, the governor vetoed one of my bills that passed like 49-0 last session. And so I think when I say that, it just obviously you're priming yourself to have some very non-controversial bills vetoed by the governor when you come out publicly in some of these situations.
Senator Wilson, do you have a different opinion of that? Do you believe that, given the fact that the that it's not an election year like it was, you know, this session isn't going to land in an election year like this past one, do you think that that is going to dampen enthusiasm from some Democrats to pursue this?
I would hope that they would see the light. I mean, as Marcus said, there are others that would appreciate moving forward on this bill. And, you know, there may be tweaks in it, but that's how they're made. And I hope that there would be the political will to do this year. Like you say, it's not an election year. And you have to look at the long term, right? It was 1969 when the original emergency powers were put in, and nothing had been done since until 2019. So it's time to look at this. We have different abilities to do things like, you know, zooming to vote and all that. Now we don't have to, you know, ride horse and buggy to get up to the Olympia. So I think that we need to catch up.
Yeah. In terms of priorities, though, Senator Mullett, you know, every session brings new priorities, and I've been looking at some of the pre-filed bills, et cetera. This session, do you think for Democrats that they're willing to make this a priority? You don't have to out anyone, but have you heard any sort of momentum that this might be a priority?
I think it is going to be a tough political lift, is my guess. And I signed on to the bill because I think it's the right piece of public policy that we should have in place for the state of Washington. But I agree with your assessment that it was more likely to, I think, get to the finish line last session, just given the politics of a tough election year coming up, and people realizing this is where I think the general population of the state of Washington wants to see. So I think this is a bill that I think is popular with the voters overall. But I also think this session will be a very hard political lift to make this a priority that gets to the finish line.
And I'm just curious to have you weigh in. I'm not trying to get you in trouble with your party or anything, but something really pissed me off last year at the end of the session. You know, like you said, this emergency power reform passed the Senate. It goes to the House. And then all of a sudden, at the last minute, it doesn't move. And some Democrats in the House blamed Republicans, saying, well, they wanted to come to the floor and speak about this, and it was wasting time, and we didn't have the time, so they just killed it. Do you think it was fair to blame Republicans for killing it at the last minute?
I don't think it's fair. I was obviously in the minority in the Senate my first 5 years there, from my 2012 election through the 2017 cycle. And when we're in the minority, that's the tactic you do in the minority, is you tend to slow down floor debate, because a lot of times the chamber, the group that's in charge of the chamber, is passing legislation that you might not like. And so it's a very traditional minority tactic to try to slow down the speed of what bills are going through that you don't like, because the theory is if you spend more time on one bill, that could be five other bills you don't like that don't come up for a vote. So I think that's a very traditional practice that both sides of the aisle have used. So I don't think it's very fair to say, oh, what you're doing is, now we're going to punish you for it, sort of thing.
Yeah. Senator Wilson, let's end with this, and it'll be the same question for both of you. Even if you want to speak more broadly about the upcoming legislative session, what are your hopes for it?
Well, I the very least, I hope we get a hearing, right? We didn't even get a hearing for the last 2 years. And so not only did it not get a vote, but it didn't get a hearing. So I would like to have the conversation, right? An honest and open conversation about the plus and minuses of doing this. And that's what we can do in committee. And I'm not in that committee, but certainly I'd like to get in there and express what my concerns are and represent those that elected me, right? Because that's what's been lost in this whole thing, is that the legislature is the voice of the people, and we haven't had the opportunity to be their voice in so many things. I mean, there was like couple of years ago, or I should say later in the emergency, there was like 500 proclamations, and so many of them we had no voice. So that's what I'm hoping for, at least.
Senator Mullet, similar question for you. And then I guess, how would you message this to your party when you're trying to maybe convince them that, hey, we need to take a serious look at this year?
Well, I think my main message is the one I mentioned earlier, that you have to pretend the shoe is on the other foot. What do you think is the right public policy for the state of Washington? And that would be, it's the same message I've had before. And I think last year, the argument was, well, the Randall bill is moving. And so that's the bill they heard. And that's the bill that was going through the legislative process. I'm not aware of any Democrat-sponsored bills this session. So I think Senator Wilson's bill that I signed on to is the one that can force this conversation to happen. And hopefully it does.
And hopefully it does. That's my conversation with Democratic State Senator Mark Mullet and Republican State Senator Linda Wilson. It aired this week on my podcast, The Undivided Podcast, putting together a bipartisan proposal to try to get emergency power reform done. I so appreciate Mark Mullet as a Democrat, his introspection. And as he said, if his party's being intellectually honest, they would pass emergency power reform. And I truly believe that this bill that they've put forth in the Senate is very reasonable. It still leaves a very high bar to reverse what a governor is doing in a state of emergency. And there is no remaining argument against emergency power reform. All right, coming up next, the New York Times did a lengthy interview with crypto fraudster Sam Bankman-Fried, and they are being eviscerated for the fluffy, puffy nature of the story that came out of it. That coming up on the Dory Monson Show, Brandi Crews filling in.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dory Monson Show, Brandi Crews filling in. Nicole and I were passing our time during the commercial break talking about how I'm obsessing over stupid details of a wedding that's 9 months away. I need to, I got really good wedding advice from you guys on the show last week. I don't want to obsess over my wedding for 9 months. I was talking about how I spent like 3 hours on the couch last night looking at possible centerpieces. I'm like, oh my God, I got to snap out of it.
You spend so much time working on the planning and obsessing over these things, and it's all one night.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And I was looking at like the average price of a wedding in the U.S. because I'm thinking, how much am I supposed to spend on this? Because I work for myself now, so I'm not trying to spend a bunch of money on a wedding. Mm-hmm. And the average price of a wedding in the U.S. is like $28,000. You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Because I do okay financially, but $28,000 seems like an insane amount of money to me.
Yeah, venues. I think it's mostly going into venues. Venues are expensive.
I mean, I'll spend half that on booze, but it's like, that's the only thing I want to splurge on. Anyway, sorry, this is a short segment. I'm talking about my wedding. Keep the wedding advice coming in on the text line, though, 888-973-CHIRO. If I'm filling in for Dory the rest of the week, I might as well come away with some great wedding tips, although most of you are saying just elope and don't spend the money. Sam Bankman-Fried, of course, the disgraced crypto king. It's really fascinating. So the New York Times, which I've always found their tech reporting to be very kind of anti-big tech and stuff. And so it's odd because now they're being absolutely eviscerated online for this really kid glove reporting on Sam Bankman-Fried, who, of course, is facing now the possibility of life in prison over the collapse of FTX. And so there's two New York Times articles in particular that people online are like, why are you so obsessed with this guy? So one of them had to do with his time in prison in the Bahamas before he was extradited to the U.S. And this, there were these odd details about how people in the Bahamas, like they like Sam Bankman-Fried has been vilified in the U.S. is basically the gist of this one article. But in the Bahamas, they love him. And it's like, this is so weird. It talked about how when he was in jail in the Bahamas at this place called Fox Hill, is the penitentiary in the Bahamas where he was being held, how it talks about what all the other inmates would get. And a traditional meal for breakfast was sardines scooped and grits scooped into a moldy cup. But how Sam Bankman-Fried was treated as like a celebrity, and he, because he's a vegan, he would get jam on toast. And it's like this article from the New York Times about like what Sam Bankman-Fried was having for breakfast in prison in the Bahamas. And it's super strange. And then even after being eviscerated for that one, apparently on Sunday, a New York Times reporter did this long interview because Sam Bankman-Fried is now out on a bond and he's living with his parents in California. And they did this lengthy interview with him. David Yaffe Bellany, who is the reporter, he writes about crypto for the New York Times. So he does this interview that lasts late into the evening, like till midnight with Sam Bankman-Fried. And nowhere in this article is it like critical of what he did. It's basically just like treating him as some like misunderstood person who overextended himself. And there
like
was
a Brittany Griner. That's like,
well, I would not compare Brittany Griner to Sam Bankman-Fried.
No, obviously I wouldn't. But I'm saying that's how they're treating him. Like he's not being, or it's not a, you know, a crime that he committed. That it's, you know, he's just being unfairly held.
Well, and it's not even just that with the New York Times article, but it's how they don't really push back. It's like almost like they got access to him, and so they just let him just spout off and put what he had to say in this article. And there was this really good tweet that said that nowhere in this long article on Sam Bankman-Fried did the New York Times use the words fraud, crime, stolen, criminal, and it talked about instead how he's getting sleep, surprisingly. He's able to sleep despite everything going on. It's just a terrible article from the New York Times. So it's weird because, like I said, they've been kind of anti-big tech, big business, but really, really favorable of Sam Bankman-Fried. All right, the Big Lead at 2 coming up next on the Dory Monson Show. I'm going to talk about a massive drug bust and why Governor Jay Inslee needs to concern himself with what's happening at the southern border. Stick around.